Advices Radio is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The opinions of the host and guests are not to be taken as medical advice. If you have a health concern, see a doctor immediately.
When it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. It's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
Advices.
Wrong advices.
Advices.
Wrong advices.
Wrong advices.
Advices.
Wrong advices.
Welcome to Advices Radio. This is episode number 26. I'm your host, Scott McNally. Advices Radio is presented by Knapps Gear. Today we have a really cool program lined up. We're going to speak with documentarian and artist James Grelish. If you guys are into bodybuilding films, you know damn well who James is. This guy is a man on fire. He's been making really cool documentary films. If you remember back at episode 3 of Advices Radio, I spoke with Dave Crossland. He was the main subject of Under Construction 1 and 2, which were also feature documentary films by James. Today we're going to talk about 100% Nasty, which is his newest film featuring Anth Bales and Leroy Davis. Leroy, if you remember him, he was the training partner of Dorian Yates back on the famous Blood and Guts. So this is really going to be a fun time. I want to get more into this than just talking to James about the movie itself. I want to talk about making a movie and I want to find out what his motivations are. I mean, realistically, James is just another guy like you or me, but he's had this vision and he has this drive. And because of those things, he's become one of the most popular documentary filmmakers in bodybuilding today. It's guys like him and Mike Pulcinella that are just blowing my mind and entertaining me and getting me to ask questions. So I really want to take my hat off to these guys. I really appreciate them, and I'm excited that we can pay homage to James today on this episode. Before we get started with the program, a couple more program notes. So if you tuned into Bodybuilding Nerds Radio this past Friday, you heard my announcement that Blood, Sweat, and Gear, a new podcast, is going to be coming to the Advices Radio Network. This podcast is going to feature Ken Skip Hill, S2H, and I will be there to hold it down in the background and ask questions. This will be a Q&A show just like Muscle Minds. So these shows are going to run opposite of each other, playing every other week. Both shows will have their own Q&A thread. These threads are already up. They're at the Advices Radio forums. So if you'd like to take part, please head over and ask your questions. On the note of announcements, I have one more announcement to make, and then I think I'll be done with announcements for a while. I'm getting tired of all these announcements, and I'm sure you are too. You do one announcement, and that's fun, and that's exciting, yeah, but then you do a whole bunch of announcements, and it's just like, you get desensitized to it after a while as a listener, I'm sure. So this will be my last announcement. Actually, I'll make an announcement right now that this will be my last announcement. All right, let's move on. So coming to the Advices Radio Network, Clinical Muscle, featuring Dr. Stephen Ogden and VJ Peary. One and a Half Doctors are back, and they will be taking the mic. There'll be a Q&A thread up at the Advices Radio message board as well, and you guys can head over there to ask them your medically related questions. So we've got a full house over here at the Advices Radio Network, and I'm excited about it. We're going to do a lot of cool, fun stuff. As you guys know, I mean, I'm just like you. I'm a podcasting fan, first and foremost. And what do I like? I like to hear a lot of great shows. And that's what we're trying to do here for you at the Advices Radio Network. So I'd like to make as big of an impact as we can in the podcasting world and have a fucking hell of a time doing it. We're not done. Not by far. That's not all you're going to get. 2017 is going to bring a whole lot. We have articles that are coming in now. We have people that are writing. We have an editor. This is really coming together, and it's super exciting. Individually, we can do a lot, but as a team, we can do so much more. We're all going to die one day, so let's do it, leaving the biggest fucking impact we can in this world. So with that said, normally I would just cut the music and go straight to the show, but this time I'm going to let it play. Here's to 2017. Better be careful when you bring my name up. Fuck this fame, that ain't what I came to claim. But the game ain't gonna be the same on the days that I leave it. But I swear one way or another, I'ma make these fucking haters believe it. I swear to God, won't spare the rod. I'm a man of my word, so your fucking head's better not. I'ma fuck around in this bitch and roast everybody. Sleep on me, that pillow is where your head will lie. Permanently, bitch, it's Betty Bye. This world is my Easter egg, yeah, prepare to die. My head is swole, my confidence is up. The stage is my pedestal, I'm unstoppable. Incredible Hulk, you're trapped in my medicine ball. I can run circles around you so fast your fucking head is spin, dog. I split your cabbage and your lettuce and olives. I fucking pick the world up and I'ma drop it on your fucking head. Yeah, bitch, I'ma pick the world up and I'ma drop it on your fucking head. Yeah, and I could die now, rebirth, motherfucker. Hop up in my spaceship and leave Earth, motherfucker. I'm gone. Welcome back to Advices Radio. I'm your host, Scott McNally, and with me today is James Grelish. He is a filmmaker that we've talked about. We had Dave Crossland on from the Under Construction 1 and 2 film. Well, today we actually get a chance to talk to the guy who made it. And not only has James made Under Construction 1 and 2, but he's also done a bunch of other stuff. To me, those are the most notable films. But he's also done the Prep series, a bunch of different short films that you can watch over at his website, which we'll talk about later. And most recently, he has done a new film featuring Anth Bales called 100% Nasty. So it's a real pleasure for me to have watched the film and now have this opportunity to talk to James.
He reminds me so much of the way Dorian was, his attitude, his approach of training, his mentality.
From the start, you always looked at Anthony and said, God, what can he be? Anthony
Bell! I say, even when I was a kid, I had a pit around me. I did it properly. You know, I had a milk round. I wanted to be the best milkman. Everybody's got this misconception that you just eat, sleep, train. Most professional bodybuilders I know have got a job.
I was a massive fan of bodybuilding. Seeing what state it's in nowadays, it is a bit heart-wrenching.
If somebody gave me a poor cup of being second, I probably wouldn't accept it, to be fair. To me, you've got to win it. 2012, please
step onto the rostrum. What would you attribute his success to?
Hard work, nothing else.
Now we live in a society where everything is expected to be instant. Post your pictures online and it's available to the whole world.
Social media, people are not better bodybuilders because of it.
Got this skinny ass pencil neck walking around in local shorts and a fucking vest.
James, how you doing today, man?
I'm good, Scott. Thank you very much for having me on. I've really been looking forward to this, actually. I have to say that I really like the way you interview people. I think you're a really good interviewer. I think you do your research and I think it really comes across, and I'm looking forward to having what I hope is an intelligent conversation. I'll try not to lower the tone too much.
you're awesome, man. I've really enjoyed watching your movies, and I feel like it's just been in the last several years that I learned who you were. You've kind of just hit bodybuilding filmmaking just by storm, you know. And a while back, I had interviewed Mike Pulcinella. I referenced you as being one of the other guys that I really look up to in filmmaking for bodybuilding stuff right now. It's guys like you and Mike that I feel like are really raising the bar. No pun intended, Mike. When did you actually get into filmmaking?
Well, first of all, I'm really grateful for comments like that, Scott. It's really, I'm really bad at taking compliments, but I'm slowly learning to get better at it. So I really, really appreciate words like that. So thank you.
Absolutely.
I got into filmmaking just over 3 years ago. I was a bodybuilder actually before I was a filmmaker.
Okay.
So I'd done a couple of shows. I'd started training people. Because obviously, as we know, once you've done one show, you're an expert in training people. So I was doing that. I wanted to create some video content to promote myself as a trainer. So I bought, I think, £100 video camera and just started playing with it. And I don't know, just instantly it felt right to me, shooting footage, editing footage. I just felt compelled to do it in a way I had never really felt compelled to do anything else. Like, I studied music originally when I was growing up. I played guitar and was a singer and did all that kind of stuff. But
no kidding.
Yeah, it was weird. I mean, whilst I still love music, I still play now. I never got that feeling of like, I need to sit down and practice guitar for 9-10 hours and then, you know, go to bed and read about guitar stuff and music stuff on my phone and learn more and then get up early and do it again the next day. Now, when I started to do video stuff, I literally would just sit for hours and hours and hours editing footage, thinking about footage, reading about it, and, you know, without anybody sort of telling me to.
Okay.
So that really told me, like, wow, I should, you know, this is something that I should really look into doing. So it was purely by chance, mate, to be honest. And I think there's maybe a lesson in there in terms of, you know, most people out there are kind of looking for that one thing that they love that they can try and make a career out of. And I think you're not going to find that unless you try as many different things as possible.
Hmm.
You know, obviously if I hadn't tried this, just having a bash at doing film content myself, having never done it before, I never would have found it. You know, by all means, I tried lots of other things, bodybuilding, music. I'd been a sales manager for a few years and stuff. But yeah, it was purely by chance. And I think I was really lucky, you know, to find that at still a fairly young age, I think.
Well, that answers another one of my questions, and that was, what motivated you to shoot bodybuilding-related films? And now I see it's because you've been a bodybuilder yourself. Do you still train and eat the diet and everything?
I do what I can in amongst a really, really busy schedule.
Sure.
That's not to make excuses, you know, at all. I've spent enough time around people like Anth and stuff to learn that, you know, at the end of the day, if something's important to you, you make the time for it. I have to say that this year, since I've been doing this, and it's been less than 6 months since we launched Under Construction 2, I've pretty much just been keeping the pilot light on in terms of my training. I train every other day.
Gotcha.
I try to eat a relatively decent diet, you know. But it's a real challenge, you know, and I really take my hat off to, you know, we cover a bit of this in the film, you know, guys who are working full time, who have families, who travel for work, who still manage to hold it down. It's fucking hard, really hard, you know.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, I love a good, hard, nasty, no pun intended, yeah, workout as much as anybody else. You know, I really enjoy that whole battling with yourself, you know, the pain of it. You know, and overcoming that pain gives you joy and stuff like that. So I think I'm probably in it for life, mate, unfortunately, in one way or another.
Nice. Yeah, I feel the same way, man. It's a sport that I love, and I love being able to talk about it with other people that are involved. So, you know, in a way that keeps me close to the sport that I enjoy doing. And I can only imagine that for you, it's the same way. I mean, you get to go to the gyms and be in the lives of all these different guys that, you know, are very focused.
Definitely. I mean, it gives people so much, you know. I have traveled the length and breadth of this country, and I've traveled to a lot of parts of the world and met so many people who bodybuild. And I have to say that the reasons people do it are as varied as the people themselves. There are so many different motivations. Some people love the time on stage. They love the end product. Some people just love the suffering of prep. Anth is one of those people.
Yeah.
And some people do it as almost therapy. You know, it gives them a sense of confidence, of self-worth, of discipline. And I can definitely say I'm one of those people. You know, I found bodybuilding during a time when I was unemployed, very depressed, very, very low about myself. Mm. And it just gave me back so much in terms of feeling like I could do something for myself, you know?
Yeah, no, I can totally relate to that. So when I think of you, and like I said, I feel like up to this point, at least, Under Construction is the thing that stands out in my mind the most. And my thought is, James Grelish is a very dark filmmaker. That movie was so dark, and the energy was so heavy in it.
Would you care? I want to move on here, because my point here is to eventually contrast that against your new film, 100% Nasty. But would you care to just talk a little bit about that darkness from Under Construction?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, I'm in the position where there's been some time to let the dust settle, I think, on Under Construction 2, certainly. And I think on reflection, it's not an easy film to watch.
Yeah.
It was a film that that I put together in the edit during a pretty bad time in my personal life.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, at the beginning of this year, just as I'd started to do the post-production in Under Construction 2, and I'd already started to film 100% Nasty, I think I had just gotten back from filming in Marbella, and I'd just gone straight into like 12-hour days of editing Under Construction 2, and I collapsed in my kitchen, and just randomly one evening, and of course the first thing you think is like, okay, what's wrong with me? Is it a brain tumor?
Yeah.
Have I got AIDS? Or, you know, I sounds flippant, but you know, you assume the worst.
Yeah, well, sure.
So I was taken into hospital, and unfortunately the doctor said, there's nothing wrong with you. You're just completely burnt out and exhausted. Wow. And you need to take some time off. And unfortunately that was really, really hard for me to kind of accept that limitation, you know, because I'm the kind of guy where, you know, I apply almost a bodybuilding mindset to my business. You know, I'm like, no matter how hard it is, I'm going to keep going. No matter how many hundreds of hours it takes, I'm going to keep going. If I have to have a half an hour's sleep, it doesn't fucking matter. You know, if I have to sit here and do everything myself, and it doesn't matter. So I think during the time of editing Under Construction 2, it was always going to be a dark film anyway.
Yeah.
But I think the fact that I was in that dark place, and the fact that, you know, really with a documentary, you build the narrative in the edit room. Yeah. I think that really comes across. But you know, it's not just that. I think you're right. I think the fact you've identified that there's a darkness kind of to what I do is definitely true. You know, I had a very, very difficult childhood growing up. I don't come from a rich family. We were very poor. There was quite a lot of violence and things like that in my childhood. Not from anybody within my family or anything, just a lot of kind of trauma and things like that.
Yeah.
So I definitely think that comes through in what I do. Having said that, you know, like you said, moving on to 100% Nasty, I think I found a little bit more balance, perhaps, between the darkness and the humor. I think there's some kind of maybe touching moments and things you can laugh at quite a lot in 100% Nasty. So, or maybe you'll tell me different, Scott. I don't know. You know, you tell me.
No, and that was, yeah, that's what I was saying, is that there is definitely a contrast. And when we began watching this film, the new movie, 100% Nasty, so we see Anth Bales and he's starting his day. He takes his dog Floyd out for a walk. And this is in the county of, tell me if I'm pronouncing this right, Tyne and Wear.
Yeah, that's pretty much right. Tyne and Wear, yeah.
Okay, and that's in the northeast area of England. It looks very suburban. You know, the light is very soft and beautiful. It's a cheery, like, start to the morning. And everything about this, I feel like, is very everyday and very common. It feels very soft and very easy. It's definitely a different feeling than the way that the Under Construction film started. You know, from there, we get to meet Leroy, who Leroy Davis was, as we all know, the training partner of Dorian Yates, and he works with Anth. And eventually they come together, you know, after we've seen into their lives. We get a really cool look. I got to tell you, man, I really like how you were able to just kind of show who they are through, you know, being at home, or, you know, through Anth being at his gym where he works and owns. And then from there, though, it contrasts once again with like a real brutal training scene. Like when you guys go to training, it's like the switch is just flipped, and everything that felt like everyday and normal, and that, you know, these are just normal men that anybody could relate to. I mean, they start doing some stuff in the gym that I feel like is above and beyond what we normally see.
3, 2, 1, ah! Last master chest. Drive.
There we go.
Drive.
There we go. Drive!
Move!
Again!
Drive!
Two more!
Move!
Two more!
Drive!
One more!
Up there!
Drive!
Get it up!
Again!
Drive!
Finish it!
Squeeze there! Squeeze! Squeeze!
Nice low! And breathe.
Yeah, the thing about making a documentary like this is, you know, it's focused around one man, obviously primarily Anth, like you said. Leroy is kind of the supporting actor in it, if you like.
Yeah.
But I really wanted to show sides of these guys that people hadn't seen. Anth and Leroy, like you said, they're both very well known people certainly in UK bodybuilding and worldwide as well. So
sure.
You know, it was really important for me that that we capture kind of the duality of the guys. You know, I think one of the things that makes life so interesting is duality. You know, on the one hand, Anth is this very softly spoken guy who is really soppy with his dog and his daughter and is incredibly polite on one hand. Then when he's in the gym, he's one of the most intense, intimidating, if you wouldn't know him, screamy, shouty, veins bulging everywhere, smashing ridiculous weights around, and the polar opposite, you know. And Leroy is exactly the same. So it was really important for me that we opened the film with, here is Anth walking his cute dog, that everybody takes the piss out of because it's not a massive bulldog,
which
obviously you should have as a bodybuilder. Here's Leroy in his garden. He really likes to garden because it relaxes him, and here's all his old pictures and things like that. And it was really important that I think that we captured those two guys in an honest way that I think was true to those two people, you know. And I certainly have a lot of affection for those two guys, you know. And Anth, I can really say this, you know, genuinely, Anth, just what you see is what you get. There is no kind of, this is Anth on social media, but the real Anth in real life is different. He is exactly as he seems, you know, and he's one of the most genuinely likable people I think I've ever met in the sport. Leroy Davis is one of the most intense people I have ever met. When you sit down and you talk to him, it's like his eyes are looking into your soul.
Wow.
And Dorian is the same. And to some extent, I have to say Anth is like that. You know, when you spend time around these guys, there's a certain X factor, and I can't put my finger on it really. There's like an intangible quality they have where there's just this intensity. And when they're looking at you and you're making eye contact with them, there's just this almost hypnotic kind of thing, you know. It's really hard to describe. So, yeah, you know, I think I'm really glad that the training stuff comes across in a brutal way, because like I said, I think it's important that we capture the duality of these people. But I think that there's been hardly anything shown really around the people they are outside the gym, you know. And obviously, as we know, that's what makes it interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you saying that now, I think back and all I knew of Leroy was what I had seen in, you know, the gritty black and white footage from Blood and Guts. And as far as I was concerned, the man was just like a crazy drill sergeant 24/7. I would have never expected. He's got the same things to deal with. He's the same person as the rest of us, you know, in all of his life. Can you talk more about their friendship? I found, though, that through bodybuilding, I can have like really cool, awesome friendships with other men that is a bond that I had never experienced before, honestly. And I get that feeling looking at these guys. You know, you really showed me their bond together as not only in bodybuilding, but just as human beings. How did you show that to us through film?
I think I completely get what you're saying, you know, and I think at various points throughout my life, definitely, the kind of family I've had through gyms and bodybuilding and friends like that has felt like more of a family to me than the people I'm kind of related to by blood, you know?
Sure.
I think it just comes from, there's a certain type of person who pursues bodybuilding. Like I said, motivations are always different, but generally there's a set of character traits in people that pursues that. And I do think it takes quite a unique set of kind of character traits to stick at it. You know, you kind of see guys who come in, they'll have a bash, they'll kind of lose their way after 6 months. But anybody who's been in it for a certain period of time, the likelihood is you're going to have some common ground with them at least. Now, in terms of Leroy and Amph, they're just so similar in the fact that, you know, as people, they're pretty humble. They're pretty, what you see is what you get. There's no front. There's no bullshit, you know. And they're very respectful, very, you know, family men. They would never have a bad word to say about anybody, really. But when it comes to training, all of their fury is kind of pointed at that. And they actually revel in the pain and in the suffering and in the hardest parts of it that most human beings would kind of shy away from. So it's easy for me to see why they get on so well.
I like to keep my circle small. And there's certain individuals that I know pretty much within like 2 minutes whether I'm going to like them or not, or get along with them. And Leroy is one of those people who, you know, I just felt like I kind of clicked with.
This is my therapy. This is just cutting the hedges and it just being on my own, cutting the lawn or doing the hedges or whatever. This is the wife's area. She looks after this when they all flower. My area is the decking and the sun loungers.
Leroy is one of the few people who are left who has really got a kind of passion for the training. There's not many people like that anymore.
Now, in terms of like communicating their relationship on film, I think, you know, there was things we did like show kind of the parallels between them in their home life.
Okay.
You know, I think it was really important for us that whenever they were together on screen, because they live about 200 miles apart, you see, so they don't actually get to see each other as often as they would like.
Okay.
So whenever they would be together and we were shooting, even when they were not training, I would make a point of making sure there was at least a camera rolling on them at all times to capture things. And I think there's a scene in the film where Leroy is giving some posing advice to Ant's little brother, and they have this really lovely exchange about, they talk about how emotional they both used to get during prep and how they do their cardio with tears in their eyes and stuff like that. And it's just kind of, you know, there are times when you make a documentary, Scott, where you're kind of fishing. You're just sat there with the camera turning over and hoping things are going to happen and you hold back. And then there's times where as a director, you kind of poke for a response. Mm. And I just think capturing their relationship is a lot about doing your job of making the camera disappear, being inconspicuous and getting them to feel comfortable with you around, you know, because I don't know if you've ever had somebody follow you around with a camera, but it's, I wouldn't like it. I would struggle to switch off and be myself, you know, so that's part of the challenge of a director, I think.
Sure. You know, and I've mentioned this before, it always reminds me of the lions out on the Sahara Desert that, you know, the National Geographic crew comes out there and initially, you know, the lions are afraid, but after months and months of having the camera on them, I mean, they can come right up to the guys, you know, and they don't even notice the camera anymore. I think some of it's a matter of time. And then I think some of it is probably a matter of trust too, and being open. How open were these guys at the beginning of the filmmaking? And can you speak about how you saw that progress as they, as you said, you know, begin to let the camera disappear?
Yeah, you know, a huge part of my job is making the camera invisible. I would say half of my job as a documentary filmmaker is, you know. Once I know I'm going to work with, well, first of all, you know, this whole thing started back in October 2015, and Anth just rang me out of the blue one day. I'd never really spoken to Anth. I met him once at an expo a few years ago as a fan, and had a picture taken with him, and that was about it. So
nice.
He rang me up out of the blue, and there was quite a funny moment where, you know, my phone rings, I pick it up, and I hear, is that James? Yeah. Oh, it's Anth Bales. And I think, really? somebody taking the piss or what? Because, you know, I was a huge fan of Ants even before I got into filmmaking. So the first thing I did was I said to Ant, you know, he said, I want to shoot, you know, my next bodybuilding DVD or whatever. And I'd like you to do it. I've watched Prep the Series and I really liked it and stuff like that. So I said, okay, well, let's have a sit down and have a chat. So I journeyed up to Ants and we went and had some lunch for a couple of hours and just chatted just generally about anything but filmmaking, really, you know, and just trying to suss out whether we could gel as people. I think that's very, very important. And I think, to be honest with you, I can judge that from somebody very, very quickly, probably within the first 5 to 10 minutes, if I'm going to get on with them and we're going to be able to work together.
Yeah.
That's not to say that I'm a picky, hard guy to get on with, but I think certain people just, they're not really cut out to have a documentary made about them. So
interesting.
A lot of it in the interim, and I did this with Anthan, with Leroy, is just spend as much time with them as possible talking about anything other than the film.
Hmm.
You know, just taking a real interest in who they are, what makes them tick, what's important to them. Finding out as much about them as you possibly can, as no matter how irrelevant it may seem, like, I don't know what their favorite program was when they were a kid, or anything, you know.
Yeah.
And basically always having the camera with you and never telling them when it's rolling. this is some kind of might seem obvious documentary stuff, but you know, I think I watch some documentaries and I just think you've prepared them too much for when you're going to hit record. And I really felt that when I watched Generation Iron. I really felt like there was far too much of, okay, I'm going to get the camera out now, and in a minute I'm going to hit record. And there was way too much of that. There was not enough of just having the camera always with you and having it switched on and recording and just going about the day.
Sure. You know,
that's something that I think is really, really valuable when you make a documentary.
Sure. And it sounds to me like the difference that we might be talking about too is the matter of time that you put into this. You know, if I'm sure the same thing would happen to you if you were to just say, okay, let's do this. I will be, you know, at your gym at 1 o'clock on Monday afternoon, and we will film your first leg session.
Mm.
So when you do go to shoot, when you guys begin working together, can you tell me a little bit about the equipment you use? And the reason I ask is because I think that probably plays a direct role in how much the camera is really vanishing from the situation.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, the equipment and the technology and the cameras and stuff is something that these days it's very easy to get caught up in, because we have such incredibly powerful tools at our disposal now as filmmakers. You know, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, everyone was more or less still shooting on film, huge Panavision cans and stuff like that. And if you wanted to make a documentary, your options were really limited, you know, in terms of the cameras you could use. Thanks to kind of unbelievably quick advancements in technology, you know, we live in a time now where cinematic quality visuals are less than $1,000 away. Hmm. You know, they really are. And I think, you know, one thing I try and do when I create video content, not just documentaries, is I try and spend as much money as possible on things I think will the end viewer will be able to see, if you see what I mean. There's all sorts of kit you can buy. Fancy monitors and shoulder rigs and things that look really nice and that might make your life a little bit easier. But at the end of the day, the end person watching that piece of content, they won't be able to see that. They won't be able to hear that, you know?
Interesting.
Whereas if you go and spend $500 on a really nice quality radio mic, they'll be able to hear that and they'll be able to appreciate the audio quality. If you spend a few $1,000s on a camera that can do super slow motion, that's something they'll be able to see and appreciate. So generally my advice to documentary filmmakers is, you know, spend money on things that are going to be evident in your finished product.
Hmm.
Always, always spend money on those things. Always, you know, never feel bad about that. You know, I've talked a lot with filmmakers recently who've asked me for advice, and, you know, they've kind of come to me and said, shit, I wished I'd picked a profession that wasn't so expensive in terms of equipment. And I've said to them, well, you know, unfortunately you have, number one, so you're going to have to get comfortable with that. But number two, you know, I think a lot of money gets spent because camera equipment companies tell you need this thing. Whereas in actual fact, do you really need it? Is your viewer really going to notice it? Probably not. So, you know, we shoot with Sony cameras. Sony generally lead the way in terms of if you want to shoot a film and your budget is less than, say, 15 grand, they are the absolute best in terms of bang for buck, in terms of being able to do things like super slow motion, shooting in very poor lighting conditions, which gyms unfortunately always are.
Yeah.
You know, for this film, 100% Nasty, this is probably the biggest budget I've ever had to work with. And me and, you know, I have to say, we have Anth to thank for that. because he put a lot into this film financially. You know, it, for all the training sections, there was three cameras shooting it. We had four radio mics. We had two room mics. We had about 4,000 watt of lighting that we would come and set up at whatever gym we were shooting at. So that really opened up the possibilities, you know. And I think we really sat down, and between us, we kind of said, right, we've got this budget. Let's not just spunk it indiscriminately on things. Let's actually think about how we can use it and how we can give people different angles and shoot the training in an interesting way. So
that makes sense to me. You know, everything that I saw, whether it be, you know, just like the beautiful outdoor landscapes, which, you know, I had looked at your website and it says, I see your pictures as a photographer as well, still photographer. I'm not shocked by that at all, because so much of what you're doing, you know, and so much of how you set a scene up, you really pay a lot of attention to your composition. This isn't just throwing together. I could tell that you're making a lot of decisions. You're making decisions on every shot. I don't know whether every viewer is going to recognize that, but I am 100% certain that those things are going to be conveyed and that people will pick up on that as they watch it.
Thanks, Scott. That's a great compliment to receive. I think it's something that I'm always trying to get better at, in terms of, as you said, not just throwing a shot in there for no reason, but saying, what story does this shot tell? Or how does this shot serve the story I'm trying to tell in a broader sense? You know, a really great mentor I had, and I was really lucky to have when I was first getting into shooting, was a guy called Ian Smith, who is an ex-BBC producer who's worked on incredibly big things like Doctor Who and stuff like that. And I was fortunate to spend a couple of days with him just shooting a little reality TV show. And what I learned from him, and I never, ever forget this piece of advice he gave me. He said, it's all about the storytelling. Everything else is bollocks. Huh. That was what he said. And that has always stuck with me. Always, always, always. And I'll admit, sometimes I've lost sight of that and I've wanted to get really fancy on people and kind of I've forgotten, actually, does this help tell the story? But I definitely think that with 100% Nasty, you know, I think we did a very good job of making it cohesive and not putting stuff in there just for the sake of it.
Yeah. And I think to an extent, you know, what we're talking about right now, these are all things, I guess, kind of what I was just saying too, is that maybe the casual viewer isn't going to pick up on it. But I do think, though, that you are better articulating what you want to say, you know, by making these choices.
Yeah, and I think even if it's not picked up on a conscious level, it probably is on a subconscious level.
Exactly.
You know, I think that's probably one of the things I love most about filmmaking, is the freedom of expression you have in terms of, I don't know, you just have an image. You could shoot 100 different ways. You could light it 100 different ways. You could color it 100 different ways. You could have 100 different kinds of music behind it, you know, and you ultimately have a huge amount of control over the emotion that the end viewer is feeling. And ultimately that's the thing I get off on about filmmaking, is I really like making people feel things with my visuals, you know, whether that's, like you said, darkness, intensity or brutality in the gym, or heart touching moments, you know, with Anthony's baby and his dog and his family life and things like that, you know, that's ultimately the thrill of it for me.
Yeah, I could see that. So, you know, one of the other concepts that I'm seeing here is, you know, Leroy, he is definitely the epitome of, you know, classic old school blood and guts bodybuilder, versus, you know, Anth is, he is in the new generation of bodybuilding. And one of the themes that I'm seeing a lot of here is a comparison of those two generations, the pros and cons of each, really. Would you care to talk a little bit more about that? And why was that such an important subject for you to cover in this movie?
I mean, Leroy Davis is a man who doesn't even have a Facebook account, which in 2016 is outrageous. That's like, you know, somebody living off the grid practically.
Right, right.
If I remember right, I remember him telling me, I think, that he had to be persuaded into even having an Instagram account. and by the way, if you want to follow him, he's Nasty Leroy Davis. And he is pretty good at getting content up, actually, I have to say.
Nice.
But You know, I think we talked a little bit about this off air, but in terms of the story we were telling with Anth in this film, we followed him over a year, just under a year of his life as he was attempting to prep for a pro show to get back into the game after having been out with injuries for 2 years. And when you watch the film, you'll see that unfortunately things didn't quite go to plan for Anth. And there was a real kind of heart-wrenching kind of outcome for Anth, I think, yeah, with the prep. Because it meant so much to him, because he gives it everything. He puts his whole heart into it. So because things kind of didn't really pan out that way, I kind of decided and persuaded Anth that we would do this. We sort of decided to really take a look at this feeling that is pervading throughout the sport of bodybuilding at the moment. Now, the federations and things like that will almost tell you this isn't the case. But trust me, it is the case that unfortunately at the moment, the old school, the hardcore bodybuilding guys feel there is a really strong divide within the sport at the moment.
It is definitely a sign of the times. I mean, nobody kind of wants to be a bodybuilder anymore. They just want to be a physique guy or a bikini competitor. And, you know, I don't want to sound like a dinosaur, but I'm passionate about bodybuilding. You know, nothing against these other kind of classes or federations or anything. It's just my thing. So
back in the 90s, the bodybuilding world was a small community, and everybody knew each other. Today, I kind of feel sorry for the bodybuilders. In fact, I do. I mean, I walked around the Body Power last year and I was so disheartened for them because, you got these big professional bodybuilders walking around and training their asses off, making massive sacrifices.
On the one side, there is fitness-orientated classes and athletes such as men's physique, bikini, and various other kind of spin-offs of that have started to involve kind of dress wear and swimwear and all kinds of things. And then on the other side, you have the guys who are still in it for the same reasons that the guys were in it 20 years ago for, or 30 years ago for. You know, they love the journey, they love the mass monsters, they love pushing everything to the limit. And unfortunately, those guys at the moment are kind of feeling like they're a dying breed. Yeah. And they're kind of feeling like the industry as a whole has kind of embraced more of the fitness side of it and thrown all the money and the spoils and stuff at that part of it and kind of forgotten about them or kind of moved on and doesn't really recognize their achievements that much anymore. Mm. It's quite easy to come across as kind of bitter about it and, negative and things like that. And whilst there are probably some controversial things said in the trailer to get people's attention, I think if you watch the film, you'll see that these guys are just talking about what they love and what they believe in. They're not out to put anybody else down. They just really, really believe in this and they've given their whole lives to it. And the message that they want to deliver to people are, you know, to those guys within the hardcore fraternity who are feeling sidelined, is to kind of keep the faith, you know, because everything moves in cycles, Scott. You know, if we look at music, heavy metal was massive in the 80s. It was one of the biggest musical genres. Then it kind of went away in the 90s and grunge kind of took over and various other things came in. And in the early 2000s, it kind of came back and now it's kind of gone again. And I think, you know, bodybuilding and fitness as an industry, they share a lot of parallels with show business and the music industry and things like that. So everything moves in cycles, I think. So this is kind of just a recognition type of film of the guys who were really there in the early days and the guys who were still doing it, who were still running, you know, the hardcore gyms that are struggling to make money because every gym out there is £10 a month now. You know, it really is that type of film. And I have to say that Anth deserves a hell of a lot of credit in trusting me to take this film there because he's still a show promoter himself. Hmm. He's still a gym owner himself. And to tackle this feeling, I think has opened him up to quite a lot of backlash and criticism. Luckily, none of which has come yet. So I think Anth does deserve a lot of credit for trusting me to take this film in that direction.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think you guys handled it real tastefully, though. I don't feel like there's any point where you're actually pointing fingers at anybody. I feel like you guys are, you're talking more about the positives of hardcore bodybuilding versus spending too much time pointing out the negatives of, you know, the quote unquote fitness industry.
Yeah, I think the response we've had has been, you know, phenomenal, really. I have to say that in order to protect myself, I go into every film launch with like incredibly low expectations. I more or less expect it to be a failure and for everyone to hate it, because that way, you know, I protect myself emotionally. And I think, but, you know, there was a quote that I read from a really long review somebody had done on muscular development, where they said that after watching the film, they felt proud to be a bodybuilder again. And I just thought that's just exactly what we wanted to do, I think. And I really felt really, really satisfied reading that. I'm really happy just to read something like that.
I could see that. You know, a lot of the guys that I'm attracted to follow that are in the UK, they are of that hardcore nature. I don't see as much, and maybe it's just because I'm only seeing the people that I want to follow. You know, here in the US, we have so much of that fitness BS. You know, the gyms I go to are oftentimes just filled with men's physique guys and bikini gals that have no real concept of the history of what they're doing, nor do they have really much respect for that. You know, it's all about posting, you know, butt shots on Instagram and ab pictures and all that. Is it more hardcore in the UK? Is there still a decent community of people, or is that shift happening over there too, just as strong as I see it here in the US?
No, I would say this shift is just as pronounced. I mean, I can't speak obviously for how it is in the US.
Sure.
Apart from what I see on social media and talking to people who live there. But I would say the shift in the UK is just as pronounced. You know, I have been to maybe 50 bodybuilding shows in the past couple of years, and I've kind of seen it firsthand how the focus has changed to that. You know, I do think there's merit and there's things that deserve praise and deserve recognition about what the fitness guys do. You know, I don't think that what they do is without its merit, and I don't think it should be blanketly dismissed. What I do think is, you know, having met people on both sides of the fence, I have to say that I think their motivations for doing it differ greatly from the hardcore bodybuilding guys. I think that from most of the people I've met who do the fitness side of things, their motivation is the end product of being on stage and the recognition for doing it. The trophies, the, you know, the accolades and the being able to say that I did this and this is who I am. The bodybuilding guys are very much in love with the process and the hard work and the journey and the suffering, really. You know, let's kind of be honest about it. It isn't nice going in the gym and inflicting agony upon yourself and then being sore for a few days and then doing it all over again and then eating this horrendous diet and, you know, doing unspeakable things to your body with drugs and things like that. You know, it's not for everybody, but I do think the motivations differ broadly, I have to say. And me personally, I can identify much more with the kind of introvert guy who loves the process, who just wants to put a hoodie on and see how far he can push himself on his own in the gym without looking for any recognition or trophies for it. You know, me personally, I can really identify with that more so than the kind of the guy who wants to be seen to be have done this and have all that kind of recognition, I think.
I could see that. I think that shows through in the decisions you made with this film too.
Yeah. I mean, it's as brutal as the training sections are, I would like to think that people could watch them and think, wow, I really want to go and train now.
Yeah.
And I would like to think people can watch them and actually see just how much enjoyment Anthony Leroy get out of it and just how much joy they get from, you know, inflicting this amount of sort of pain on themselves, you know.
Yeah.
I really hope that kind of comes across, you know, and people aren't just watching it as kind of torture porn.
You know what I found interesting too, kind of related to all this, is that bodybuilding is said several times in the film to be selfish. But at the same time, I don't see like a dark isolation in this movie. I see people that are very well connected to their family and to their friends. You know, I see their relationships as being strong, and I see these people as being like complete human beings. They aren't just, you know, robots programmed to do, you know, eat, sleep, train.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's small circles, and the circles are very tight is what I see in guys like that who are in the hardcore. They have a small group of friends, but within that small group, the bonds, like you said, are incredibly strong. You know, and I think it's weird. It's almost like, you know, like it reminds me in some ways of films like The Lost Boys and stuff like that, you know, where you just have these kind of little groups of rebellious, kind of, you know, do you know what I mean? It really reminds me of that in some ways. You know, people have likened kind of bodybuilding and stuff to like a cult and things like that, but I really don't think it is. You know, I never ever see bodybuilders on an active recruitment drive saying, do you know what you should do? Yeah. You should prep for 20 weeks and become the grumpiest you've ever been and suffer and spend all your money on it. And do you know what I mean? They're never really kind of trying to draft people into it. So I really don't think it's like that. I think it is more like a kind of exclusive kind of club. You know, as much as fitness has become popular and it's grown, I still see it that way. I really do.
Tell me more about Dorian Yates. You had Dorian Yates in this movie.
Training is sacred to me. That's my time and my meditation, where I just want to disappear from the world and just get into the training.
Yep.
Come on then, Auntie. See what you got. Come on, big fucking legs.
As a bodybuilder, I'm sure that had to be like the pinnacle of excitement.
I mean, yeah. What can you say, really? Dorian Yates, you know, I have to say, you know, and I don't know if this is the case in America, Scott, but in the UK, you know, you mention that name to anybody in bodybuilding, and it's like you're mentioning Jesus. It's like, it really is. You know, it's like, oh, Dorian, oh, yeah, bloody hell, he was blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it really is still like that over here. You know, he might have been Mr. Olympia 20 years ago, but it's like it happened last week to the guys who were still into the sport. It really is.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's just this X factor, and I know that sounds like that's a horribly cliched fucking phrase, but you just meet certain people and you think, I'm like in this kind of bubble when I talk to them, you know? You're having a conversation with them and it's kind of like everything else disappears. And you're having this incredibly intense conversation that you don't really know how you got there, but you did. And Dorian's just like that. He just has that aura around him still, you know, even though he's retired, and I think he's more into yoga and smoking joints and talking about conspiracy theories. He definitely still has that. You definitely talk to the guy and you can get that focus from him.
So we
went over to Marbella, where he'd opened his gym, you know, and we were there for the gym opening in the film. And then we returned to Marbella later on in the film to train with him and get his take on where things are in terms of the fitness industry and stuff like that. And I respect the guy. You know, there's very few people who I could honestly say I think of as role models. And, you know, whilst he's pissed enough people off in his time, and there are enough people who would say, I never want anything to do with him again, I still think of Dorian as one of those role models, to be honest with you, because he's just one of those guys who is unapologetically himself, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if who he is pisses you off or offends you or anything like that. He just is himself and tough shit. Hmm. And I think in an age of kind of, you know, social media putting pressure, unbelievable pressure on people to be anything other than who they are, or to be a different and better and superior version of what they already are, I think we really need people like that, you know, and that was one of the things that really made me sad about Lemmy from Motorhead dying this year, because he was somebody else who I think could be on that list of people who I think are role models. Again, a complete fucking nut job, collected Nazi memorabilia, which was a bit weird.
Yeah.
You know, complete sexual deviant, but a guy who was just completely unapologetically himself and lived by his own set of values and rules. And, you know, me personally, I think people like that are incredibly important to move things forward.
Yeah. And I think my perspective, at least, is I think everybody who's really into hardcore bodybuilding still has that respect for Dorian over here. But I just have to imagine it's not as strong, because every time I've ever mentioned the name Dorian Yates to anyone from the UK, even if it's on the radio like this, I hear things just light up. Everybody just loves him so much. And I think it's still stronger over there.
I just think there's a lot, there's so much that people can relate to about what he stood for and where he came from. You know, this is a guy who grew up on council estates in poverty and had to take the bus to the gym for most of the first few years of his competitive career, you know. And I think the fact that he was somebody who shied away from the media attention, and I think, as we've talked about in this interview, you know, was just in love with the process and the pain and the kind of the introverted nature of the sport. I just think that there's so much there that people can relate to and see in themselves, way more than a guy like Phil Heath. You know, just sure. Way more.
Sure. You know, and I feel like you're conveying a lot of those same things through Anth. You know, he talks about having grown up, you know, in a very average blue collar type situation. I feel like he's a guy that I would have grown up with. And you convey a really strong work ethic. You know, those are things I think that strike me as being very Dorian-esque.
I mean, Anth is, it's funny you should say that, because when we were, when we shoot a documentary, my process is we shoot everything.
Yeah.
And then at the end of it, we shoot a master interview.
Okay.
With the main character. So we have a scene list by that point, and we talk about things that we've shot and things that have happened.
Ah.
And we can talk about them in retrospect. So, one of the first things I think I said to Anth when we shot the master interview for this film was, I said to him, you know, your family, the rest of Anth's family, they kind of all do more or less a manual labor type job. His mum and his dad have horses and they have a farm and stuff. And his younger brother, I need to get this right now. He works on the roads in some way. I can't quite remember what he does, but it works in some type of construction. And I said to Anth, I said, you know, one thing that really strikes me about the way you do bodybuilding is you almost approach it like a trade.
Yeah.
You know, I said, you know, I look at your younger brother and I see the way he does his job. You approach bodybuilding exactly like that. And I said, when I watch you train, you're like, you know, somebody who had to get up and work on the roads. They would be up at 5:30 a.m. and they would start work on the roads at 6 a.m. every day, no matter what. And Anth is like that. He will train to his absolute limit at this time, every day, every week, no matter what. Hmm. And he'll apply that to his meals, to everything, you know. And he's just very workmanlike in that way. And I can only you know, assume that is due to the fact that he does come from this blue collar working class background, as you said. And I think definitely in the Northeast, that's kind of a culture that still exists. You know, there was a lot of miners who used to live up there, and a lot of people who kind of work with their hands and stuff like that. You know, if you've got a desk job up there, you're kind of a bit of a wimp, really, still.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Yeah, we're like that here in Detroit, too. You know, we all came from, you know, the production assembly background, and everybody here is...
The automotive, yeah.
Yeah, we're very, you know, work-oriented. You mentioned a little while ago that things didn't quite go as planned for the film. Can you talk about how it feels as, you know, a documentarian and as an artist and as a person that has invested a great deal of time into this project? You know, you have a vision of how things are going to go. Of course, just like anything else in real life, it doesn't always go as planned.
Yeah, I think we're getting into a real truth around documentary filmmaking now. You know, there's a lot of guys who, first of all, documentary filmmaking, I can't think of a more labor intensive art form, to be honest with you.
Hmm.
Maybe a sculptor. I don't know. But at the end of the day, a sculptor has an idea. He chops it into a block of wood or whatever, and it's done. He doesn't chop it into a block of wood for 3 months, then go and sit in an office for 3 months editing it, then launch it, then market it, then do the, you know, he doesn't do all that. So it's real fucking hard work. It really is. And I think it takes a workaholic to be good at it, or to at least, you know, see it through to the end. I think with this film, we shot something like maybe 2.5 terabytes of footage. which is around 40 to 50 hours of footage for an hour and 20 minute film. And that was shot over the course of almost a year. You know, I traveled thousands of miles to make it happen. Anth lives 400 miles drive from me.
Oh, wow.
So even if I had to go and shoot some stuff with Anth at home, that's an 800 mile round trip for me.
Yeah.
Never mind the flying back and forth to Marbella and all that stuff we did, you know? So, it's fucking hard work. It really is. And, people come up to me all the time or message me online and they say, oh, you should do a documentary about this. And it's like some real kind of peripheral subject that probably about 10 people will be interested in. And, I just don't think they quite understand the work that goes into making it happen.
Yeah.
You know, and there are a lot of guys now in the UK who shoot fitness stuff as a specialty, but, I still seem to be the only one who's fucking nuts enough to do feature documentaries about it. I seem to be the only one who's a sucker for punishment enough to be doing that, you know, kicking out two features a year. But sorry, Scott, going back to your original question. Yeah. I mean, things never go to plan with a documentary ever. When I start making a feature with somebody, we'll sit down and we'll do pre-production and we'll plan out what the film is going to be. Not because that's going to be our map and that's going to serve us well and that's how it's going to come out. That's purely because, if nothing else, we have something that works on paper. Do you know what I mean? And we're not going into this thing and investing all this time and money in it on a gamble.
Sure. Know? Just like if I start a diet, you know, I have an idea and a contest prep, you know, I'm going to add this supplement at this time and, you know, ideally add cardio here. But of course, once you actually get into the thick of things, it takes its own course.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when things go off course and things go wrong and you get pushed down avenues that you never intended, I think at that point is when you really earn your crust as a filmmaker.
Yeah.
Because if you're sharp enough, you make it work for you.
Yeah.
And actually you come out with something that's probably better than if it went to plan, or at least as good. You know, that's the ideal scenario. I think with Under Construction 2, you know, things went so wrong for Dave during his cycle.
Yeah.
That we actually had this opportunity to go off and investigate all the steroid laws and culture in Europe and things like that. You know, we wouldn't have been able to do that if things hadn't have gone wrong. And by the same token, with 100% Nasty, you know, if Ant's prep hadn't gone the way it had gone, we wouldn't have been able to make the film as much about this feeling of kind of sidelinedness amongst the bodybuilders and about where the sport has come from and where it's going and delving into really the mindset behind it as it is in 2016, you know?
Yeah.
Honestly, I've never made a feature yet that has gone how we thought it would go. Even with Prep the Series, where we thought it would be all about the rivalry between these two guys, it actually turned out to be, well, actually this has brought them closer together.
Yeah.
It's actually distanced them more from their wives, you know, if anything. So it's just one of those things that comes with making documentaries. You know, I think if you sit down to make something scripted, you know exactly where it's going to go, more or less. Might be a little bit of improvisation along the way, but you know, documentary filmmaking is something that constantly evolves as you're doing it and isn't final until you've hit save on the edit, you know, just about a month before launch. It really isn't. It constantly evolves. And it's one of the things that makes it a gigantic pain in the ass and a lot of work, but it's also one of the things that makes it so thrilling.
Yeah. I was just going to say that I can imagine you, it would have to be so exciting in your position to just kind of ride the wave and see what happens in life.
Yeah. And, you know, it's definitely something that when I'm shooting, I'm constantly thinking like, what am I missing? Is something happening here that I should be picking up on? You know, I'm almost like a bird, you know, sat on a power line looking for its prey kind of thing. You know, I'm really looking for things and trying to pick up on things. And, you know, we've caught some really amazing stuff by doing that. And, again, it's something that I'm always trying to improve upon, you know, seizing those opportunities as they come up.
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been really enlightening, and I hope that for everybody out there who goes out to get this film, that this interview kind of gives people a little bit more insight into what you're doing, because James, I feel like there are so many more layers to this. This isn't just a training film. You know, this is a lot more.
Yeah. I honestly think that, you know, and it's a cliche to say it, but I think that you could watch this with somebody who really isn't into bodybuilding and knows nothing about it, and they would get something from it, and they would be entertained and moved in some way, you know. That's always the ultimate goal for me, is the kind of the girlfriend test, is what I call it. Could you sit there and watch this with your girlfriend who doesn't like bodybuilding? Would she watch the whole thing? You know? I do think this film passes the girlfriend test. But also, I think, you know, the film launched 4 days ago at the point we're doing this interview. And I always knew bodybuilders would dig it. That was never in question, really, you know, because we put so much work into it. But I have to say, you know, I see the daily stats that come in from the sales, and I keep an eye on the emails, and a lot of fitness people are buying this film as well.
Nice.
A lot. So, you know, I hope that those guys can watch this, get something from it, not feel that we're out to kind of belittle what they do or anything like that, you know, and that has really surprised me. So,
Well, like you said too, there's a lot of merit still. You're not just saying that, you know, the quote unquote fitness community is a bad thing. I mean, I know plenty of guys, I work with a lot of guys that are men's physique competitors, and a lot of these guys are working just as hard as bodybuilders are. They just maybe don't have the same genetic gifts, or they haven't been doing it as long. So there is definitely merit to it. And I could see how anybody who's in the fitness industry in general could be interested in this.
And let's face it, you know, pushing your body to that extreme is not for everyone.
Yeah.
In fact, it's not for most people. It really, and I completely understand that. Just like, you know, running your own business is not for everybody. Some people would rather just go and earn a salary and not have to fucking worry about tax returns and generating work and not, you know, I completely understand it. You know, it's different strokes for different folks. It really is. You know, what works for you, and there's nothing wrong with that at all.
Can you tell me where people could reach out to find this film?
Yeah, the film is on sale as a DVD, as a download, and as a stream at its own website at www.100percentnasty.com. And percent is the word, not the symbol.
Cool.
There was some issue with doing that as the web address. I definitely say to people, if you can, follow Anth's official Facebook page, which is Anth the Freak Bales, because we post a lot of content on there. And I have to say, Anth is really one of the kind of old, hardcore, old school bodybuilders, but who still really is really good at social media. He posts up a lot of training videos and you know, general advice and some things that are quite funny from time to time. And I really would encourage people to follow his page. It's definitely worth following.
Interesting.
And anybody who wants to get hold of me, God forbid, the website for my production company is www.jgfilms.co.uk. Anybody who wants a chat or whatever, you know, you could always hit me up on Facebook Messenger, and some people have been Instagram messaging me. I might be busy, but I do respond to everybody and make a point of doing that. So don't be shy.
And it sounds like you are really busy right now. I mean, the film just launched a few days ago. We are recording this on Thursday. It will be released Monday. I'm sure you are going to be busy for a long time to come.
Yeah, this is the busiest time of year for us at Christmas. Lots of DVDs getting shipped out, lots of marketing and stuff. I'm probably not going to take a rest until January, I would have thought. You know, we'll give ourselves 48 hours, maybe. We'll see.
You know, I know it's kind of early to ask you this question, but I can't not ask you. How do you compare this as far as your experience making 100% Nasty compared to Prep the Series or compared to Under Construction?
I definitely think that, you know, making this film, this is the film that people have been telling me to make for 3 years.
Okay.
This is the film that, you know, people have come up to me and said, you know, you should make a documentary about a pro, and you should shoot loads of training, and you know, we really want to see that. And I've always said, like, really, you know, there's been a lot of fucking training stuff, and you know, you really want to see that. And you know, I've kind of thought, like, oh, you know, and been a bit reluctant, but I really feel like, I don't know, making this film just felt very, very cohesive to me, and felt very things just came quite naturally. You know, once I had kind of Anth on side, and we were comfortable with each other, and the same with Leroy, I just felt things evolved in a really good way. And there was a lot of things that happened along the way. And some people might say to me, you know, why did you choose to shoot this? Or why did you shoot it that way? And what made you? And honestly, all I can tell you is it felt right. It just felt right to do that. It felt right to include this scene, or it felt right to shoot it that way, you know?
Yeah.
So I will say that, you know, this definitely feels like the most cohesive film I've put together, I think.
Nice. You know, and I'm sure that we're a little ways off from seeing anything else that you're making, but I know you haven't just stopped here. There's got to be some gears turning in the back of your head. What's next?
Well, there's going to be, this isn't the last you've seen of Anth. Definitely not. There's a hell of a lot of stuff that we shot for 100% Nasty that we intentionally shot to not put in this film that we're going to be releasing in the new year. That's all I can really say at the moment. But keep an eye out. Again, that's kind of why I said to people to follow Ant's official page. Like I said, we shot a tremendous amount of footage over the past year. And, you know, we planned from the start that there would be the feature film. And then there will be a little something else to kind of come in the new year once we've gotten that out of the way. So so keep your eyes peeled for that. That aside, I do have a project that I've just started work on that's kind of going to be a little bit away from bodybuilding.
Really?
With a subject quite close to my heart, revolving around some mental health issues and around just some kind of broader subjects and things like that. So So I guess it's time to see if I really do have the filmmaking chops. You know, it's going to be a project that's not about bodybuilding. So if ever the pressure was on to for me to show what I've got, I think now's the time. But that's some way off yet, but I have started work on it already.
Listen, I can tell you right now, you do have the filmmaking chops. The question will be, are you as interested in that topic as you are in bodybuilding?
Yeah, well, I mean, I would say I am. You know, I'm not fishing for compliments, but thanks, Scott. I appreciate that. I think, that's just the way things are. You know, when you earn a living off being creative, I think, every time you approach a documentary or a project, you're always fraught with your own insecurities around it.
Sure. Sure.
I have to say 100% Nasty was no different. You know, that there's definitely a point in every project I've done where I felt at least once, fuck, I can't do this. I felt like, okay, this is going to be the fuck up now. This is going to be the flop. This is going to be the disaster. It was only a matter of time. You know, this is my fraudulent coming out. I'm not really a filmmaker. You know, I didn't go to film school, and it's all going to be, you know, that happens every time, Scott. And I think that's what I'm kind of getting at when I say it's time to see if I've got the chops or not.
Well, I'm going to definitely be interested in checking this out. So I'll be following you on Instagram. I'll be following you on Facebook. And I'm definitely going to be watching this film again. I highly suggest that everybody picks this up. And like you said, this is perfect timing for Christmas. So it's an excellent time to have released it.
Definitely, yeah. If you watch it on Christmas Day, just make sure there's a gym open near you, because you're probably going to want to train after that.
All right, James. Well, thanks a lot for being with me. I really appreciate your time today.
No, I've really enjoyed it, Scott. Like I said, you're a great interviewer, and it's always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right, thanks. Guys, for Advices Radio, this is James Grelish. I'm Scott McNally. Keep grinding.